Rutherford County is full of older adults dealing with the challenges of aging.
Truman Jones for At Home Care.
According to the National Family Caregivers Association, Tennessee has nearly 600,000 adult sons and daughters struggling to provide family caregiving to their aging parents.
At Home Care.
They're hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. They provide their clients what they want most, to remain in their own homes as independently as possible with their own familiar possessions, neighbors, and schedules. What they do can't be learned from a book. It comes from the heart. They truly do care. They provide top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee.
At Home Care.
Give them a call, 713-4639, and their place of business is located at 237 Castlewood Drive, right here in Murfreesboro.
That's At Home Care.
This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And welcome with us this morning. Good morning, Rutherford County. I have Mr. David Jones on, and we're going to have a good time. We have something in common. We're both Joneses. And I used to like to run, and you're still running and have been most of your life. And one of the things that we want to talk about a little bit, of course, is your family. And your mom has been like family to us and probably most of the people in Rutherford County, because when they started that business over there, it was just like, when you go in and talk to her, she was the nicest lady. I mean, I couldn't wait to get in and talk to her. I mean, she was always, and your dad too, loved him. And I know it must have been pretty special growing up with him.
Yeah, it was. We remember that. Of course, we opened that wash in 1971. And my brother and I, we were in college, and we didn't know what Sundays vacations were, and we worked 7 days a week because we were scared we weren't going to be successful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mother was a very, very driven woman, very independent woman, and I appreciate you saying that, because I hear that throughout the community. Mm-hmm. The people that come up to me, my brother, my sister, and say the same words that you just said, it's very comforting. Mother's in Adams Place now, doing well.
I'm glad to hear that.
Adams Place has just been a tremendous resource, and have been just tremendous with her. But very, very driven woman. She, down there in 71, opened the business in 71, never went on vacation till she left the business in 2009 from a stroke that she had. But never went on vacation for about 40 years. So I guess that not the life that I would want, as far as not going on vacation, but she, very driven. That was her life. She loved it, though. She didn't want to be anywhere else. That's where she wanted to be.
She was a people person. She loved to come in. And the thing about she and your dad both is they never changed. They were always the same day after day. And that speaks volumes for them, because, you have to respect that.
It does. They were just, we were poor, and
weren't we all?
Well, yeah, we were. We came up poor, and but she was driven, just wanted a better life for us and her children and the children, so she and Dad worked hard. And again, I think the success of it was certainly contributed to the people of Rutherford County and Murfreesboro that supported the business. And she realized that, and as a result of that, she was very appreciative to the people of Rutherford County, I always hear her words. All she always says, "Thank you and come back," and I think that's
every time.
Yeah, thank you and come back, I hear that resounding in my head all the time. Just thank you and come back. So those are her famous words. But she's doing well at Adams Place. We talk about the car wash still when I go out, and she wants to know, if the sun's shining, how many cars is he doing, and Palmer's taking it over, and real proud of him. He's worked hard.
Palmer is doing a great job.
Yes, he's worked hard. Very proud of what he's done down there and doing down there, And I told him I scratched my head a little bit, and I'm 61, and Palmer's 15 months older than me, and he retired from teaching. I scratch my head sometimes, Truman, and think, what in the world are you thinking? Wanting to be in business, going in business at 62, 63, but
I think he's enjoying it.
I do. He's always loved the car wash, yeah. And he's helped Mother since the OnStar. He's very mechanically minded. He's always loved working on the equipment, and I really think he took to the wash as far as more than my sister and I, of course. I kind of went off in a different direction into banking, and my sister went into the educational field. Mm-hmm. Over in Franklin, and Palmer, even though he taught on the weekends, he was always at the wash, or in the evenings he was down there working on the equipment, getting it ready for the next day. So he's really been affiliated with it since the OnStar.
Every one of you seems to have an unusual energy pack. I mean, it's unbelievable. Your mom never slowed down. She was continually moving. Palmer is busy all the time over there. In fact, yeah. He told me about 3 or 4 weeks ago when I was getting my car washed. I said, man, you're moving all the time. Why don't you come on my show? And he said, well, you know, why don't you have Brother on? and he is so funny. Of course, we talked about you and the whole family. And we were having lunch with Norma Jean. Oran Autry, Sunday,
yeah.
and she said, I told her that you were going to be on my show, and she says, you be sure and tell him hi. We went to school at McFadden together.
That's exactly
and I
right.
didn't realize that you went to McFadden.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Matter of fact, we went to Critchlow in grades 1 and 2, at least I did, and then my brother, sister, and I, we all went to McFadden. At the time, Mr. Weiser was a principal, and we knew him, and even though we lived over by Critchlow, a couple blocks away, we went over to McFadden at the time. And and Norma Jean, we were in several classes together, eighth grade together. And but looking back over it, back then, you know, I laugh today because it's a magnet school. And back then, I always tell everybody back then, if you got in from recess, back in from recess, you had a good day. but actually, you know,
there's a lot of truth to that, because at Mitchell Nelson, yeah. We played McFadden in basketball, and I know what you're talking about.
But you know, actually, Trevor, when you look back on it, if I had you over again, I wouldn't change anything about going to McFadden. It was actually a great school and
great neighborhood.
Great neighborhood, great people over there. You know, the Honeycutts, Kenneth and his family, and it just, the list goes on and on. Just a lot of good people. We maybe a few kids, just poor kids. But like I said, if I had to do over again, those are really my fondest memories of childhood is McFadden. And the teachers over there, Mrs. Gordon, Bart Gordon, who was congressman, his mother, Margaret, Miss Margaret, who's out at Adams Place in the independent living.
Sweet lady.
Fantastic, fantastic lady. I mean, and all those teachers over there, just tremendous. Tremendous teacher. So now, if I had to do it over again, I'd do it. I wouldn't do anything different. I'd go right back to McFadden. Now, it is kind of fun to know that it's a magnet school. These young kids, when you tell me you went to McFadden, now they relate it to a magnet school, and I don't tell them any different now.
It's funny how things change, isn't it?
360 degree circle there.
Yeah, I still remember fondly Jakestown. I mean, I really do. That's some of the fondest memories I've had in my whole life. And I go through there now. And I thought we were living in castles on those houses, and they're so small, but they were very well built. I mean, it was a great place to grow up, and it's the people around you that make your neighborhood special.
It really was. I you know, basketball and baseball. We all really in the projects down there. That's where we learned to play baseball and basketball. We were there every weekend, and after school, we were down there in the projects. There was a green area in the middle of the project, still there today, and we all got down there, and me and Harold Nipper, Kenneth Honeycutt, and my brother Palmer, and all of us, we gathered there, and every waking moment we went in school, we were out there either playing baseball or football in that community. And I think of all the Tuckertown, Happy Hill, and all those places where a lot of people locally. yeah it was all good memories, really. Yeah. Really good memories over there.
Now, you're known for your banking skills and things like that, but the biggest thing you're named for, and we're going to get into that, is your running. You do not run like everybody else. You're at that very top level. You're a world-class runner, which means that you're running at the highest level in your sport. What in the world got you into that to start with, David?
Yeah, that's interesting. When I hear you say that, I've been very fortunate to stay healthy, and I don't think I have any more skills or ability than anybody. I just have worked hard at it.
Running's in your mind.
Yeah, and training. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, what got me into it, really, probably 31 years ago, my wife and I, Pally, who's a very avid runner, and she was running before I was. I just turned 30, and I went out to MTSU, and like all of us, I went out to the old track, and mm-hmm. I thought, well, I'm gaining a little weight. I need to stay in shape. I wasn't playing baseball, basketball anymore. Went around the track, quarter mile track, went around twice, went home, my eyes sunk back in my head, thought I was going to die, got in the tub. So there's hope for all of us, but that's really after I was trying to get back in shape a little bit, not even think about running, because as you and I were talking just a little bit earlier before we came on the air, back in our day, running was punishment. When we played
right.
basketball and baseball, if you did something wrong, it was, go give me two laps or give me five mm-hmm. laps. And so I was kidding earlier, now my hobby was what our punishment was back in the old days. But really, my wife, Pally, was running more than me. She had already ran, I think, a half marathon at the time.
I thought you got Pally running.
No, just the reverse. Actually, she had ran a half marathon, and she was just coming off a stress fracture when we started dating. And so I started running. We started running a little bit, and then started running some 5Ks and 10Ks. Back when you were running 5Ks and 10Ks,
right.
I remember us well. We both were running 5Ks and 10Ks here locally and around.
I'd wave bye to you.
No.
And you went by me.
We were just novice, and so there's something Pally and I were doing together. We enjoyed it and trained together, and then she says today that she's responsible for having released a monster. I talk about my running because I went on to.
I understand what she's talking
yeah,
about.
But I just laugh. But really, so we kind of went on this venture together, and then we both decided we wanted to do a marathon. So it just kind of developed, and we started doing marathons in '84. And then as far as the long stuff, I saw I was a pretty good marathoner. Qualified for Boston and ran Boston five times, and I've qualified for Boston every year since 1987.
How's that last part, what they call the wall? How is that?
Hitting the wall or the in Boston, you got the Heartbreak Hill mm-hmm. at 21 miles. But I have found the wall is any distance has it. If you run a mile or 100 yards mm-hmm. or two loops around a quarter mile track, all of them have a wall. It's where your training kind of comes in with you're aligned there that you just, I don't know, I guess from a training standpoint, you can only get in such shape, and some people surpass it to go out too fast, but there is a wall there. But usually it's when you haven't gotten your, figured out your pace right, you've gone a little above your pace, gone out a little too fast, mm-hmm. and you hit that wall. Most people say 20, 21 miles, and that's usually about where it hits on a marathon, about 20, 21 miles. If you're really running at your level of conditioning, you'll hit.
Most people that run are just amateurs. I ran all the time without any instructions or whatever, and running is actually mental. It's psychological, it's physical, and plus it's scientific, because when you run like you do, you have to know what your body needs as you're burning it up and what it's going to take to do that. And then when you get into extraordinary conditions like desert running, then that is really a complicated issue, isn't it?
It really is, and people ask me that, and everyone, what do you drink or what do you eat or so on, and I always tell people, you really have to find out what works for you, because what works for me will not always work for you. But yeah, and running, certainly in the desert, I've had an opportunity to run out there on several occasions in a race out there, and you really have to have that down almost scientifically. The body can burn and metabolize about 300 calories for the average person in an hour. So you really have to get your fuel intake, your fluid intake, and also your food. You really got to stay on top of that, because if too much or too little Too much is just as bad as not having enough. And so you really, going back to what you said, the scientific aspect of it, you really do have to kind of put some thought and time into that, because if you overhydrate, you can get in trouble. Certainly, as we all know, if you underhydrate, you can get in trouble. So
you did that one time, didn't
you?
Yes,
I did. Most of the time that I bonkered, I tell people this race out in the desert called Badwater, which is 135 miles out in Death Valley in July, the hottest week of the year, and you're running from the lowest point in the continental United States, which is a place called Badwater, which is 282 feet below sea level. Mm. And the race goes uphill and finishes at Mount Whitney, which is the highest point in the United States.
How's the air there?
Well, you know, it's
very... Like it'd be very difficult to breathe.
It is. I mean, it's just so hot. A few of the places along the route, for example, Furnace Creek, Stovepipe Wells, all those names kind of depict what the weather is out there. But it really is. It's kind of like, Truman, it's kind of like a... if you've ever put your face in front of an old wood stove or furnace, mm-hmm. the hot air, you know, but out here, out in the desert, any way you turn, it's just hot, dry air. And
you don't sweat as much.
No, you don't. You can get in serious trouble out there when you do that race. It's very dangerous. It's known as the toughest foot race in the world. That's what kind of drew me to give it a shot. And I've finished the race. I've done the race 6 times. It's done me twice, is what I tell people, where I didn't finish the race on a couple of occasions because of overhydrating in one situation.
How did you feel when that happened? I know Pally is your...
She's crew chief, yeah.
She's the crew chief.
Yeah.
She makes sure that you get everything that you're supposed to get. On that particular occasion, how did you get off on the amounts of intake that you were getting?
You know, it's very difficult when you're trying to judge it. You'd have to be there, but there's a lot of things going on. This year, my crew was Pally, who's always gone as crew chief, and Christy Dugosh here at the Fleet Feet store, who owns Fleet Feet store, and Rick Caffey. They all are part of getting all that orchestrated, but a lot of times, me, the runner, I think I want to drink more, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of in control. In other words, they'll tell me, but if I think I need more, I may drink more. Or if you don't keep up with it totally, mm-hmm. yeah, because there's so much going on, you can overtake fluid. So it, I know it seems like you should be able to say, okay, you know, here's 16 ounces, and when you get through drinking, you only drink that in an hour, But the temperature is up and down. You're expending different energy levels at different paces. Some of it's got so many climbs. So it's a hard thing to do. This year, Pally and the crew, they were on top of it. They orchestrated and kept me right on my calorie intake and fluid intake, and it worked out well. First time I've ever ran the race and not thrown up 4 or 5 times. I didn't throw up at all this year. So they had me right on and on my fuel and my food intake. But It's just hard to keep up. There's a lot of things going on out there, even though you're running. The crew's got a lot on their plate to try to keep up with me.
You've been very successful running that. You really have.
You know, it's still a hobby to me. I mean,
You're competitive, though.
Well, you know, wherever it washes out in a race, it washes out. But I don't race much. Maybe I'll usually pick 3 or 4 races a year, mm-hmm. Truman. But I have a lot of friends that have run a lot more ultras than me, but they go to do them and experience them, and they put another ultra on their resume that they ran another one, and that's great. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. It's just, I've just kind of taken the attitude, and I guess it may come from my family life or upbringing, my mother being competitive, but just when I go to a race, I like to feel like I like to train for it, feel like I'm in tip-top shape for it. One reason I found that it doesn't hurt as bad if you're in shape, but I always try to go and race. And really, I don't race to win. I race to do the best that I can for myself. Mm-hmm. And wherever it washes out at the finish, is I'm okay with it, unless I know that I put everything out on the line, you know, myself, whether it's first place, fifth place, 15th, 30th place. It's really insignificant if I just know that I gave it all and I trained for it. And so I have been lucky. I've been fortunate. I found that, like everything else in life, my results have a direct correlation with the amount of training and time that I put in preparing. And So, you know, I have been, you know, as far as the ultra world, I found that at my age, to be able to set American record in 2003, something hasn't been broken yet. The record I set for age over 50.
Probably won't be broken.
Well, I think it will be. There's definitely better runners out there that they just haven't taken the task on, I think, as far as, because this, to break the 100-mile American record, it's got to be a United States track and field sanctioned event. It's, you know, the course has to be very measured. It's very, it's got a lot of rules. And when I did that in 2003, I went up there. That was my goal to do that. I thought I could do it, and I just had a good day and was fortunate enough to do it. It's held for 9 years. If it holds this year, the record's over 50. It's held for 9 years. So, you know, who knows? I think it will definitely be broken. I hope it's broken. I look forward to someone breaking it. There's a lot of better runners out there than me, so I know some of friends of mine that I know will break it. But it's good to know that you had it. At one particular day in 2003 in my life, I can say at age 50 and over, I ran the fastest 100-miler of anybody in America. And right now, it's still there, so it's kind of nice to have it on your resume.
Now you're talking about 100 miles. Do you remember what your time was and how did it break down?
Definitely. It's in my mind. And one reason, I ran 15 hours, 18 minutes, and 49 seconds. The old record was 15 hours and 39 minutes. So I remember I broke the record, wow. The American record, by about 21 minutes. And the reason I remember the pace, most people say, well, how fast is that? Well, you know, for local runners that run on the Greenway and around here, they kind of know a 7-minute, 8-minute, 9-minute pace. That day, that was a 9-minute, 11-second pace, 9:11. And I remember 9:11 because it was 2 years, almost to the day, September, when I set the record. It was about 2 years after the 9/11 event, and just how ironic I set an American record running a 9:11 pace, 9-minute, 11 seconds per mile. So, which doesn't seem fast, but to try to hold that for 100 miles is difficult.
Sounds like it's almost impossible.
Well, that, you know, it's a head game, and I've never ran a 100-miler yet, or the desert run 135 miles. I tell people when I get through, when you drive back across the course or the desert, or you just get through a 100-miler, it's hard for me to fathom, you know, someone running 100 miles. I mean, it's just hard for me to believe I've ran 100 miles myself. I know it sounds weird, but it is 100. I mean, I think the same way you do. It's kind of, I think those guys that run ultras are crazy, and I guess all of a sudden I wake up and I'm one of them, I guess.
Well, you think about it. I would say, you would think a lot of the runners would succumb to the heat and the distance, because, I don't know, are most of them fully prepared for that type of problem as far as dealing with the heat, and also all around you, you know, there's snakes all over the place and everything else out there.
Truman, speaking of the desert run, Badwater, yeah, to answer your question, there's 90 runners that are invited to that, and from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And you have to put in a resume application, and then there's a committee of 5 people that evaluate those resumes. Mm-hmm. And then, based upon their decision, they either send you an invitation to come run that race or not. I've been fortunate enough to have received 8 invitations, and the last one I did this in July of this past year. But they invite 90 runners throughout the world. I think this year 17 countries were represented.
Do they give them a psychological too?
They should. They should. They should. No question about it. But why? Most people say, why would you even want to run that? And you know, and there's some fantastic, great runners out there that have never ran Badwater, never had a desire. Because of the torment of it, but it's strange that if you ever do it, it's kind of weird. Every time I've ran the race, when I get through, I always say I'll never come back. A lot of times I have that feeling about 70 or 80 miles into it, which is not a good thing to have. You have to get that back out of your head.
It takes 70 or 80 miles to
get that. Yeah. Well, I've always said, Truman, I've always said most people physically, I think, can run 70 miles. You can get in physical shape to recover 70 miles, and then after that, I think it's just you go into the mental mode. It's all mental. I think you find out kind of what you're made out of, and that's really why I think ultra runners do it.
When you're talking about that, I think about in Greece when the guy ran to warn the country that they were being invaded. Yeah. He ran his marathon, the distance of a marathon,
yes.
and then he died.
That's right. That's
Bless
right.
Bless his heart. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with David Jones.
At Murfreesboro Automotive, you'll never feel like you've paid too much for auto repair.
We've not had any one person show up and say, I didn't know it was going to be that much.
Chuck Haynes at Murfreesboro Automotive.
We get everything cleared before we do the work. When someone shows up to pick up their car, there's no surprises. None.
Whether it's a minor oil change or major engine work, ASC certified technicians at Murfreesboro Automotive can handle it all. They're just off Broad Street on Ridgely Road, turned between Chewy's and Chili's.
Big plans for the city. I am Ron Jordan with local news from WGNS. We have previously reported on some of the future projects that Murfreesboro has in store for us. After the last city council meeting, our new staff decided to go back and take a look at past capital improvement plans filed by the city in 2011 and 2012. Now, according to the records we found, the city of Murfreesboro is planning to build a new $1.6 million fire hall on Joby Jackson Parkway next year. The site for the building has been donated to the city. In other future projects, Murfreesboro will build a $500,000 golf teaching course at Old Fort Park, and the Murfreesboro Police Department will build a new $30 million headquarters in 2015. WGNS will continue to follow these projects over the next few years. The news brought to you by Dr. Mark Kester Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center. I'm brought across from Chevrolet of Murfreesboro. If you've been told you have to live with pain, relief is possible. Call Dr. Mark Kester at 895-1253 for a free consultation. Those rumors of a gun threat at Blackman High School, just that, rumors unfounded. SRO Captain Barry Hendrickson said the investigation showed a student told parents about hearing a conversation about guns while at school. Administrators and officers tracked down the rumors, talked to the original student who talked with parents. Sheriff Robert Arnold said the parents took the right action by notifying the sheriff's office, adding that parents and students are asked to notify SROs or the sheriff's office at 898-7770 about any information involving weapons or threats at schools. Influenza activity widespread across most of the country, including here in Tennessee, with intense activity in some regions of the state and more flu activity overall than in recent flu seasons. The Department of Health urges all Tennesseans who have not yet had a flu shot, one now. They say that'll not only help protect you, but also the people around you. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that people who have had this year's vaccine are 60% less likely to get the flu than unvaccinated people. This is WGNS News.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
Hey, Gibby, won't you let me in?
Parnell, we've been through this the last time you were in here buying lottery tickets.
I was just going to get a couple of Tennessee cash tickets.
Yeah, well, what about your cow?
What cow?
The cow that's standing right behind you.
Oh, this cow?
With jackpots starting at $200,000 and drawings every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Tennessee Cash is a cash cow. The Tennessee Lottery, game-changing fun.
I've never seen her before in my life. Gibby, there's a cow standing out here. Let me in.
Parnell.
Open the door.
Moolah.
Hey, how you doing?
Ticket, please.
You gotta have a ticket to get in here?
Yep.
I don't have a ticket.
Gotta have a ticket.
Well, how much are tickets?
We're sold out.
So I can't get in?
Gotta have a ticket.
Well, I got this ticket.
What kind of ticket is that?
Tennessee Lottery Black. Could be worth $1 million.
You're in. With a top prize of $1 million, the new Tennessee Lottery Black Instant Game could just open some doors for you. The Tennessee Lottery, game-changing fun.
This is Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station, FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, WGNS, Murfreesboro.
And a good morning to you. It is 9:34. You're tuned to WGNS. Our good neighbor of the day today is Ginger Jeffries. She is a talented artist who volunteers in the community on a regular basis. She volunteers at church, the Center for the Arts, Lamplighter Theater, and more. She puts others before herself, and today she's going to receive free flowers, compliments of Ryan's Flower Shop after being nominated the Good Neighbor. Again, that Good Neighbor, Ginger Jeffries. And our WGNS birthday cake winner is Emma Arnett, who turns 15 this morning. And today, Emma is going to receive a free birthday cake, compliments of Junior's Foodland. Right now, the time is 9:34. Let's get a look at that weather forecast.
Good morning, Scott. We'll see mostly cloudy skies across the area for today, with rain becoming likely mainly by this afternoon. Could even mix with some sleet at times, with high temperatures in the upper part of the 30s. We'll have our wind staying breezy out of the north at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Then for the night tonight, chance for some rain early on. Could mix with some snow, freezing rain, or even sleet later in the night. Will dip down to a low temperature near 31 degrees. And for the day on Tuesday, highs in the low 40s. I'm Weather Eye meteorologist Michael Caro.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Again, 9:35 is your time. You are attuned to WGNS. We will return you to Truman Jones in just a minute.
Registration for the second annual Special Kids Race presented by MMC is now open. With a sold-out first-year event, mark your calendar for Saturday, March 23rd, 2013, and choose from one of three distances, the 1-mile fun run, the 5K, or the 15K. Registration is limited to 3,000 participants, so don't miss out on one of Murfreesboro's biggest races. With your help, Special Kids can reach even more children with special needs. Register today at specialkidsrace.org and run for the kids.
Talking with Dr. Rishi Saxena, board-certified cardiologist, the first to acquire the 64-slice CT scan, and still the only one in the area that can decipher the information.
I'm the most trained guy. I'm board-certified in heart CT. Nobody else is in this area.
Before heart catheterization or stress test, call 896-4800. This CT scan only takes minutes, no needles, and it could show early signs other tests miss.
We are the only one who are trained to find plaque buildup earlier.
It's your midday catch-up on information. The Midday Report with Zach Trautman. Weekdays 11 to noon on WGNS, AM, FM, online. Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS, AM, and FM.
And welcome back with David Jones. And this part of his show is brought to you by Charlie Pitts. And he has Charlie Pitts Hair Styling on Las Casas Pike, and he provides top-quality haircuts and styling for men, women, and children. And everybody hears his jingle that starts out Shop and Swap. You can call 895-3997, and not only will you get a great hairstyle, but you can hit some really great music at the same time. And David's over there. He knows what I'm talking about.
Years and years. Great guy. Great guy.
Does he give you a good haircut before you get into the desert?
You know, I try when I go out there, I try to get it cut as short as I can before I go to the desert. Don't want any extra weight to run 135 miles. You want to be as light as possible.
You know, it just blows my mind. And we were talking off the air about going through all of the heat, and there's really nothing but burn up vegetation all around you as you run. And I ran one time in Arizona when it was 100 and something degrees, and didn't sweat a bit for about 3 miles. It's the most unusual feeling I've ever had. And you think of people that ran before you did, and they didn't have a lot of the scientific knowledge that you had. I don't know how in the world they managed it and what drove them to do it. And you said something really interesting to me while we're off the air, that your mom or dad never saw you run, and that's just fascinating to me.
Well, that's true, but you know, again, I don't fault them for that at all. Right, mother, she was busy. Yeah, she was busy, and the car wash was something that was part of her life, and I understand it completely. And the reality is, you know, running is not a very good spectator sport. It's when you run 100 miles, there's not a good place to.
Oh,
put
I some, love to sit there and watch them suffer as they go by.
It's not a good place to put some bleachers to watch, neither one ever watched me. I think run or finish a race, but mother on many occasions. She was always very concerned, and as was Dad, and Dad never, even when I ran my first 100 miler, I was telling you off the air, even before he passed in 92, he would always kid me. He said, no one can run 100 miles, and he still didn't think that I had ran 100 miles. My first one I ran in 92, and Dad passed in 92. But no, it's not a very good spectator sport, but they both were always very supportive. Mm-hmm. And mother, when I get through races, when I worked at the bank, she would send me roses to represent each mile that I ran. So she'd always say, after I ran my first 100-miler, well, why do you want to do another one? You've already done that. So mm-hmm. Typical mother, she was concerned about my safety and health and thought running 100 miles couldn't be too good for you. So she would try to discourage me. So usually before a week before a race, I'd try not to be around her because I didn't want any negative vibes in my brain. I had to think positive. So I'd always try to stay away from her for the week before an event.
Now, you and Pally work together as a team, as you mentioned, in your train. But you do something that most runners say not to do. You run by yourself a lot, because I see you out running where hardly anybody would be or anything like that. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one time you were running, and it may have not been too far from here in Tennessee, did you not get attacked by a snake?
Yeah, I did. That was actually, I was training I think it was 2006, maybe. It was I was training to do the Badwater race. Mm-hmm. So I went up to, there's about a 21, 22 mile loop around University of the South up in Suwannee. Mm. So I would get up in the morning, I'd go up there, and there's a trail. So typical morning, I got up early, went up by myself, run a 22 mile loop, and about 45 minutes into that loop, you know, the wind's in your ears, early morning, and all of a sudden, as I was going through a real grassy part of the trail, I saw a snake head hit my knee. I jumped out of the way and fell into the grass. Long story short, jumped up. My heart was beating. I thought I was going to die of shock, but I saw the rattlesnake. But then I saw I had two little hole punctures on the left side of my knee. And needless to say, I was scared, and I knew I was 45 minutes into my run. And I knew either way I had to go back 45 minutes or another 45 minutes the other way to get get back to my car. So I started walking. I'd look at it. It never did a swell. But long story short, I made it back to the car, never saw anybody, went to the infirmary there in Suwannee. A guy educated me on snakes. Apparently, he hit the bony area, put two holes in, but didn't inject me.
That's good.
He gave me a shot, wrapped it, and I was actually scheduled for a 5-hour run that day, so I went back out and finished my run. And then I called Pally on the way home, driving back from Monteagle, and said, you'll never guess what happened to me today, and so told her. But yeah, that was kind of ironic. I've had a snake bite and a very near strike by lightning in my career as far as running. That's taken me to my knees once, but the snake bite was very unusual, but I was very fortunate. It didn't inject me, and so I was lucky there.
You know, most runners have this thing, they're driven. It's a passion to them. And when you miss a day or miss 2 days, it seems like your body starts reacting negatively to you. Do you feel that? You'd almost have to, as much if you ever take a day off, that is.
Yeah, you know, I very seldom take a day off in my running, and you know, I probably am excessive compulsive behavior. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it a long time, but I do, to answer your question, you do. As you know, having ran yourself and still doing exercise and working out, Truman, as you do, you know, after you do it a while, you do feel a little guilty. Mm-hmm. If you miss a day, or you feel like you're losing something, or you feel like you kind of let yourself down. But from running, it's just part of my life. My wife, that's just something we do every day, like eating and sleeping. Mm-hmm. We get up and we're going to run before the day's out. And so it's just part of my life now. And there's days I don't want to go out there. You're having a bad day and you don't want to go out, and then you finally guilt yourself into doing it. And you've done that, I'm sure.
And then you feel better. I'm glad you
and,
did.
And, some, and sometimes that would be the best day you've had running. Yeah. It's just amazing. And there's days that I get up, don't want to go, and Pally's up and sprung and ready to go and got her stuff on, ready to go. And then she makes me feel guilty, so I don't say anything. She don't know this to this day. But then I, you know, well, she's going, so I didn't want to feel guilty, so I put on my shoes and go out the door. It's an unspoken word. But she doesn't realize it, but she's driven me to you know, put the shoes on, lace them up, and get out there and hit the pavement. And I have there's a lot of people on the Greenway running that are maybe novice, just getting started, that when I'm doing my 30-mile runs, and like you mentioned, most of my runs I do run by myself. Most people aren't going the distance or the pace, or I enjoy the solitude too, running by myself a lot. But a lot of the people on the Greenway that are just getting started or in training for their first half or marathon, they don't even realize it, but those people motivate me when I pass them. Don't even know them, don't know who they are, don't know their names. But you get motivation from strange sources. Mm-hmm. And so those people don't even know that, but even at the level I run, but they give me motivation too, to see them out there where they may be overweight and I know they're working on an issue. You say, hey, at least, you know, they're out here and they're doing it.
And the thing about they need to do is don't do it too quickly. I mean, it's something that when you're sculpting your body is pretty much what you're doing. You're building it up, and as the muscles get stronger and your lungs get stronger and all those things, you actually get to the point where you almost forget where you were to begin with, because then it becomes second nature to you, and then you just listen to your body as you go. And we were talking about some people have probably never experienced that. When you get that runner's high, it's the most exhilarating feeling I've ever had, because you can be running and just really not into it that day, and then you almost hit a wall, and then the next thing you know, you feel like you could run forever. It's a great feeling, but you know, I still think it's the best exercise in the world. I really do. I don't think anything else comes close to it, as long as you do it correctly. And do you think that people, I never had a trainer, do you think people need somebody to actually give them the knowledge of how to run, how to get started, and then maybe be able to start meeting some of their goals as they go along?
You know, it kind of goes back to nutrition or whatever works for you. I found a lot of our friends have trainers, mm-hmm. and some people need that. Nothing wrong with showing proper technique of how to do something. I agree with that completely. Just like baseball, football, you know, you've got coaches that show you how it should be done, needs to be done, technique, and mm-hmm. certainly nothing wrong with that. Find out that as you get started. I didn't do that, never have done that, never had a coach and or trainer. I've just kind of, and my only motivation for not doing that is, it's still a hobby. You know, I don't want any structure in my running other than the structure I put upon it. And that's what works for me. Mm-hmm. But people that want trainers, I think is great. Some people need that little push, need that little feedback to keep them out there, keep them going. Nothing wrong with that at all. I think the answer to the question is you got to find out what works for you, whether it be in clothing, what you wear, what your feet apparel, as far as what kind of shoes. I get those questions all the time, and I always tell people, you know, you just have to, I'll tell you what I do, I'll tell you what I eat or drink or wear, but you really got to find out what works for you, because there's a lot of stuff out there right now, and what works for me doesn't always work for you. And I'll have this fear, Truman, of telling someone, you get all these books and you hear all these people that say, well, you're supposed to do this, this, mm-hmm. this, and this, and if you do this, you'll have these results. And I've never done that, because I think there are those people out there. I don't believe in putting limitations on someone of mm-hmm. what they should do. So that's the way I've approached running. I've never been around that, because I've never wanted to put a limitation in my mind of what I can and can't do. I like to try to find that.
Well, we're going to have to put our ears on.
Do I need to put ears on here?
You need to put ears on, because we have a caller on the line.
I hope it's not my wife.
And caller, welcome aboard with David Jones.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. This is Jimmy Giss. Dave, how you doing?
Doing fine, Jim. How you doing?
Doing good.
Talking to you.
Yeah, and I thank so much of you and your wife, Pally, and Palmer, of course. I get out there to the washers. I can't do it today, but I try and go out there in the spring and summer to Jones Car Wash. They do a great job. What I was calling about and what I was going to ask you, what self-discipline, my gosh, and mental toughness out of way out the top. But what I was going to ask you, what kind of diet do you have? Do you eat a lot of fruit, a lot of proteins? Or you may have mentioned that. I just caught the show here. You may have said that already. But if you could, tell me and what have you. And I'll get off the phone here and listen. And it's good to hear from
hey,
you, Dave.
Jim, good talking to you as always. Always great to see you. Really, as far as Truman and I was talking earlier about nutrition, and again, it goes back to you've got to kind of find out what works for you. There's a lot of goos out there now that people can take every hour that's got calories in it. And then the electrolyte drinks. I mean, there's Gatorade. That works for some people. Some people doesn't. There's a fuel that you can get at Moab here locally called EFS. It's an electrolyte fuel system. I like that myself. Just works for me, and I like the taste of it. But there's so many out there. As far as diet regularly, my wife says I graze all the time. When you when you run these kind of miles,
you have to.
You have to eat. And Friday night is always good for us because that's the only night of the week that we know what we're going to eat because we usually run long on Saturday. So Friday night's always pasta and getting ready for the Saturday long run. So the carbs. Work when you run the mileage that I run, but other than that, I'm terrible. I like junk food and I like sweets as much as anybody, but I'm fortunate enough I kind of can indulge in them because of the miles I run. But if I ever cut my miles back, I'm going to have to really get more serious on my diet. But mostly carbs, and I do watch the calorie intake and try to stay away from the fats. But other than that, I pretty much eat and drink what I want.
Well, you're a walking example of people who love to eat what they need to do. They eat what you want to, but get out on the road. And I have found that out, that when I am actually running, not anything close to what you do, but when I'm running at the pace I used to love to run, I never worried about what I ate. And they'll say, well, you need to eat this or less fat and all that. I never worried about that. And, of course, you've got natural things, cholesterol and stuff like that, but I've never taken anything for that or not going to. It's just one of those things that you do.
Well, that's one really good byproduct of exercising, whether it be running or whatever works for you. Is I get on my brother Palmer all the time if he takes.
Oh, Palmer looks pretty good.
Well, I know, but I think he used to take some of that cholesterol medicine. He's going to get on me for saying this, but I keep telling him all you have to do is exercise a little bit more and you'll get off of that stuff. But seriously, it really does help in that area if you can stay active with it. Running may not be for everybody.
Well, what Palmer told me was that you're running and working out now, and you're getting ready for the car wash business when you retire from all your obligations and banking and things like that.
I think he's got that under control. I'm gonna leave that with him, Truman. I think he's doing a good job at the car wash.
No. He said he didn't want to stay there all the time like Mama did. He says he'd like to have a couple of weeks off a year, and if you could come over and assist him in that, he would really appreciate that.
Well, I'll tell him that's open for discussion.
Now you're still banking, right?
No. I actually I've been out of banking, Truman, for quite some time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I got out of banking probably after 21 years of banking. I got out, I guess, about 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've been away from banking quite some time.
So what are you doing now?
Really, we were involved in long-term care for probably the last 30 years. My wife, Pally, ran a couple facilities, subsequently sold those facilities a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And so she's kind of enjoying her life a little bit more than she has. And I'm still have an office and still do some real estate investing and different type of investing. I still own part of a long-term care facility here in Murfreesboro, which is Northside Healthcare, but very limited involvement in long-term care anymore, and just kind of trying to enjoy life a little bit more.
Long-term healthcare seems to be one of the things that's right there at the top as far as usage right now. Population gets older and older, we're seeing a large increase in that, aren't we?
Yeah, we really are. And as we see, certainly the baby boomers, as we know, come online, it's going to be an issue as to availability of beds, I think. Mm-hmm. because there's been such a long-term moratorium on beds in the state of Tennessee. So I think that's going to be an ongoing issue as the baby boomers come on board. That's why you've seen a lot of home health care. But the reality of it is, you're talking about long-term care, is that those people in a long-term care facility are usually people that could not really be cared for at the home. That's a debatable thing. It's on both sides have been debating for years and will go on debating. But the reality of it is, you know, none of us want to be in a long-term care facility at the ends of our life. But thank God we have those facilities for those people and families that need them.
Yeah, we got a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with David Jones.
Hey, you got one of my favorite friends on the radio today, Trevor Jones. David, do you remember the best backyard and front yard football player you've ever run across?
Don't tell me it was Charlie, please.
This sounds like the Charlie.
Yeah, that is the Charlie.
Hey, I could take David. Maybe another kid, and we could beat the whole street every time. David, I don't know how old he was then. David, I'm 70, and we were kids.
Hey,
you're a lot younger than me.
I'm 61, but, Charlie. I'm not far behind.
51. Yeah, I know. You could catch a bullet pass and never drop it. Just catch it, you know, just so good. And old Palmer, we'd get the scores going. Palmer just do all the griping, and David do all the laughing.
Hey, that hasn't changed, Charlie. Palmer's still doing all the griping, I'm doing all the laughing.
Doggone it. But anyway, we could take the whole street. David and I could beat them all. And we played, I'm talking about, that's the only thing to do. Either fight, pick black bears, or play yard football.
You bring back some good memories there, Charlie.
David really, really could catch a ball. I always marveled at him being able to catch a bullet pass, because I could throw a good bullet pass.
You could. I'm gonna give you that, Charlie. You could. I remember it well.
So, by George, you really caught it, and I was really amazed at it. Never forgotten you for it. We had a good time, didn't we?
We sure did. Those are good days, Charlie.
I'm going to hang up.
Hey, okay. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Charlie. Could he really throw a bullet pass?
You know, Charlie really could. I do remember that. He had an arm on him, and I guess that's why he took it and started cutting hair with it, I suppose. but Charlie, we used to, down on Walnut Street, mm-hmm. remember well, one block over from the old Critchlow School, and we'd all gather over there and play, and Charlie could throw a football, no doubt.
You know, Murfreesboro was the best place in the world to grow up, wasn't it? I mean, it was just something special. Of course, you and I have seen so many changes, but the memories just flow. I mean, when we had Floyd Leonard, yes. sons and daughter on the other day, it brought back so many great memories to me. And what a special place, and how blessed we are to grow up here.
Really, you know, those are our fondest memories growing up around the Critchlow area, and certainly McFadden. You know, and McFadden back then, as we talked earlier, it probably got a bad name a little bit, been a little rough area, but it was just a lot of good kids, poor kids, and again, if I had to do over again, I wouldn't change anything. I'd go back there, because those are my fondest memories of the people over there. Good people.
Well, some of my favorite people actually grew up over there. I mean, I've had lifelong friends from that area, and I'll cherish all those times. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with David Jones.
It's time. Blue Raiders.
Support your Blue Raiders as they compete for back-to-back Sun Belt Conference titles. Men's and women's basketball combo season tickets are on sale now and start as low as $199. Don't miss a single three-pointer. Score a slam dunk with season tickets today.
Show your true blue. Support your Blue Raiders. Tickets available at GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Go Blue Raiders.
You can fake just about anything, but you can't fake car insurance. Got a speeding ticket? That's cheap compared to what it'd cost without car insurance. If you need affordable state minimum coverage, call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO for the real thing. Drive safe, spend less, Safe Auto.
Morton Building's annual Building Value Days sales event is back, and better than ever. This year, we're celebrating our 110th anniversary and offering big savings to you on a new building. Whether you're looking for a farm building, a stall barn, garage, or hobby shop, we've got you covered. That's because Morton Buildings are custom-built to meet your needs. Building Value Days runs now through the end of February. For more information, contact your local Morton sales office or visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
got pests. Bees buzzing, rodents running all through my house. Ants chewing wood. And look, there's a mouse. I'm overrun with pests, pests. But you're gonna be sure, safe and secure. It's the last rites for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
Are you driving around in a state of doubt, wondering how your car insurance will really take care of you? I'm State Farm Agent Monty King. Let me get you to a better state, a state of confidence that the coverage you're driving around with is actually driven by your wants and your needs. That's why 97% of the people who've had claims with State Farm would recommend us, without a doubt. Give me a call at 220-2210. You'll see how easy and affordable it can be.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm Agent Monty King in Smyrna. Give me a call at 220-2210.
WeatherEye.
As we head towards the afternoon, mostly cloudy skies with rain becoming likely. Could even mix with some sleet at times this afternoon. High temperatures in the upper 30s. With breezy north winds. I'm WGNS meteorologist Michael Caro. Currently 28.
Everyone loves Stones River Manor.
We have church every Sunday and every Wednesday night. And every Tuesday afternoon, we have a Bible class, and it's taught by our administrator, Kurt Mason, and he's a wonderful teacher.
Stones River Manor, behind Rite Aid, at the intersection of Haines and Memorial. Stop by for a tour.
Get your good neighbor events to us in writing 2 weeks before they occur. We'll put them on the radio and the internet. WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
All right. And welcome back with David Jones. I want to let you know this part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. Now, when we're talking off the air, I have found out something today that I did not know, because, you know, we've done a lot of shows on talking about Spence Edwards. He was sure. Your uncle.
Yeah, well, actually, we called him uncle, but he was a cousin to my father. Growing up, we would get the opportunity to go down and visit him on Sundays in prison. I was very fond of him. I remember him quite well, and the way I knew him, I loved the guy. He was we only saw that part of him, but we'd go down and visit him on Sundays on a pretty regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I've talked to so many people that knew or knew of Spence. And everybody has different stories, and he's the most interesting character that we've ever talked about. And most people from here, especially those from Westview, the ones that knew him probably better than others and also the family members, think very fondly of him. He was an extraordinary man. He was a type of individual that had the ability to do anything he wanted to.
Apparently, and of course, our opinion of him or our view of him was probably skewed in that we only saw him. Of course, we saw him, only time I ever saw him, he was in prison. But it sounds strange, but really, we would go down and see him, and that's where we got our first dog from. Actually, it was a prison dog. We called him Cheater. We just saw him from that perspective, and Alfred, his brother, and we were young at the time, and I remember those times back in the late 50s, and I remember when Spence died, going to his funeral here, and he's buried at Evergreen Cemetery. So I remember that very vividly, and as I knew him, like I said, he obviously was a character. The things I read after his passing in the magazines and what have you, some of the things that he did, certainly don't support at all, but... the way we knew him, you know, I only saw one side of him, and thought the world of him.
We've got another caller on the line, David. Caller, welcome aboard with David Jones.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
David, I don't know if you remember me, but we went to McFadden together. This is Ray Brown, and I was just wondering.
Ray Brown,
if you
I do remember you.
On your running through your lifetime. And if you ever ran against a friend of mine by the name of Tommy Waddell. And I'll hang up and listen for your response. Thank you.
You know, as far as mentors, I could name you some, some mentors that I've had that their names you probably wouldn't recognize in the ultra running world because most of them are on the West Coast, and Eric Clifton and some people such as that. But really, Tommy Waddell, that's a name I haven't heard. I hadn't heard in a while, except I guess maybe a month ago I ran into Herman Waddell, who I think was an older brother. Mm-hmm. But never ran against Tommy. But I remember Tommy Waddell. If we're talking about the same Waddell, Tommy Waddell that I know, mm-hmm. Never did. But I remember back in the young days, he was quite an athlete, as I recall.
Let's get back to Spence a little bit, because he's the most interesting,
he's interesting
story.
He was. I guess there's a correlation there. I'm a runner, and I think on occasions he was a runner.
He just didn't use his feet that much. He was one of the more famous individuals in the Southeast. It wasn't just in Tennessee and Georgia and everything. He was well known, and as you said, there were actually publications that came out that had Spence Edwards in it and his story in it. That was amazing.
That's true. I think True Detectives, actually, my brother and I was talking the other day, I still have a couple of magazines, True Detective magazines, that on occasions will get out and thumb through the pages, have pictures of Spence when he was captured back in 58, mm-hmm. and I think was shot at that time. But have some of those pictures and tell them the story of what occurred. I remember that. I remember those days, and I remember on a couple occasions during those escapes when that occurred. My family was aware of that here in Murfreesboro, and because most of it was always focused on him coming back to Murfreesboro to either do something with Harry, one of the brothers that was in jail. And so he apparently was quite a character. We kind of lived through that, and I was totally aware of it when it was going on, when it was happening. But that was about the extent of it.
You know, I love to hear Jerry Warner talk about him because they were good friends. They grew up,
yes.
and Spence was make sure that Jerry was okay when he was over there. He would kind of look out for him, and listen to Jerry talk about him. Spence was there. If he liked you, you didn't have to worry about anything. It was just the way it was. And Jerry talks about near the end of World War II, he happened to be stationed at the same place that Spence was. And I've always found it fascinating that Spence's duty was working for a chaplain taking care of things over there. And I thought, you know, how in the world could you ever put this guy in a corner and say he was like this, because he wasn't. He was one of the more complicated people that I've ever known, and I've always wondered why in the world have they never come out with any type of movie or something like that, because I know there are people that are researching it quite well right now.
Yeah, I was contacted about 3 years ago, some people researching that, mm-hmm. Along those lines, thinking book and or, you know, maybe doing a made-for-TV type thing. Mm-hmm. Apparently, like I said, Spence was a character that we only knew him one way. But we were certainly aware of when all these things were going on upon his escaping, and when all those things were happening. I was in grammar school, and I think we were talking off the air. I recall when I was in the second grade being pulled out of school and interrogated by three FBI guys. I remember that to this day. That night, I think I stayed out behind the garage and didn't go home, because when I went home, a lot of the cars were around the house where we lived. People, I think, maybe anticipating who Spence was going to contact, you know, during his, why he was an escaped convict. So I vaguely remember those things. Well, I'll say vaguely. I actually remember very, very thoroughly, but because they're very traumatic situations. But again, that was just a situation where my dad was kin to him. He was actually a cousin, second cousin to my father, who's passed. But we always knew him as Uncle Spence. He was Uncle Spence to us. And
how did it feel like being that young and going to visit the penitentiary?
You know, it's really funny to think back. You tell people that now, and when we're talking about with friends occasionally, that'll come up and we'll talk, and they think that seems kind of strange. And I guess it probably does, but my memory of it was a good memory. Mm-hmm. Remember the people there at the prison, and like I said, we got our first dog from one of Spence's friends that was in prison, and we called him Cheater, and we had him for years. But you know, my memory as a child, and at that time, you know, I was 7, 8 years old. They were actually good memories, and when you're that young, you don't think a whole lot about it. I mean, you see the change, and you see, you know, that you're going into an area, and you know it's a prison. But at that time, you don't really, when you're that age, you don't know why someone's there, what they're there for.
I bet he really enjoyed when you guys would come over there, because he seemed like he was that type from his personality.
You know, what you read and what I read in the magazines, and of course all the things that in the articles I think Greg Tucker wrote recently, mm-hmm. in the papers, there was 3 articles, and I read those and brought back memories. But when you read those things and then you try to correlate them with the way you knew the man, mm-hmm. it doesn't jive. It's like, you know, it just doesn't seem like the same person. The way we knew him was just very friendly, nice, loving guy. Of course, he was in prison, mm-hmm. but like I said, I don't certainly the things that he's supposedly done, certainly don't condone that. The way we knew him, you know, we saw a total different side of him,
Of course, that's a different time as far as how things, word got out, how people were treated, how you were looked at them. I know that down in Georgia, there was a lynch mob type situation with him after the GBI guy was killed. But even in that particular situation, there was still an eyewitness when that individual was killed that said that Spence did not do it. He was not the one that pulled the trigger,
right.
which is an interesting concept that sometimes your name gets so much larger than life that no matter what happens, situation is going to be attributed to you.
And I think, I recall the that specific situation, and you know, of course, who knows what occurred, but I was always of the understanding that there was always a question as to Alfred having done it and doing the shooting versus Spence, mm-hmm. And that Spence kind of took the route for Alfred because he didn't think Alfred could take it, and I think that proved to be the case because, you know, Alfred, we used to go see Alfred, and Alfred was in what they call an insane asylum at the time for criminally insane in Georgia. So we'd go see Alfred, but Alfred never would talk. He would just kind of sit there and smoke a cigarette, and then Alfred died in 94 here in Murfreesboro, unbeknownst to us. They, back in the 80s, when they released a lot of the mentally ill out of the hospitals for budgetary reasons, unbeknownst to us, I think maybe back before Dad passed away, he tried to find Alfred, and come to find out he was out on the road on the streets for 10 years, then ended up in the VA hospital in Nashville and was transferred to Murfreesboro, and none of us knew that. And Dad finally realized that he was in the VA hospital, and I understand he died in 94. But he's not buried at the cemetery here. I know Spence is buried here, but Alfred's not. I don't know. They tell me that his body may have been donated, but no one claimed him, so I don't know the outcome on that. I'd be curious to know that.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you on, David.
True.
And I'm glad you came over. I'm sure you'll probably have your running shoes on in 30 minutes and be out there running the Greenway.
I'll be there before the day's out, no doubt.
It's always good to see you out there.
Truman, it's a pleasure and an honor that you even asked me to come on. I told you, if this will not help your ratings at all, I tell you.
Oh, yes, it will.
My pleasure.
It's a great show, David.
It's my pleasure.
Tell
my pleasure.
Pally high.
I will for sure. Thank you, Truman.
Okay, and Palmer. I'll probably see Palmer next day or two because the weather's going to break. I'll be back.
Don't forget my sister Charlotte now. You ain't get me in trouble if you don't.
Okay, great show.
Thank you, Truman.
And we'll see you guys in the morning. And we were talking about him, and we'll have Greg Tucker on in the morning. See you in the morning at 9.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Let's check those Good Neighbor Events. Just a few openings left.
in the Garden Basics class that begins January the 26th over at the Lane Agri Park. It's taught by the Master Gardeners of Rutherford County. If you'd like to take this five-week course, call quickly at the Lane Agri Park, 898-7710. And on cold mornings, an electric heater can be a lifesaver for a senior citizen. If you know a senior on a fixed income who can't afford an electric heater but needs one, contact Dwight Ogleton at the Warm Mornings for the Elderly program. His number is 818-2459. And the Rutherford County Chamber of Commerce Business at its Best Banquet is coming up Friday, February the 1st. That's over in the main ballroom at the Embassy Suites Hotel and Conference Center. This is the Chamber's most prestigious night. Call the Chamber of Commerce at 893-6565. Be sure to bring a new blanket by WGNS so that the Blanket Brigade can hand them out to homeless persons on cold winter nights. WGNS is on South Church Street next to the City Police. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. Please come by and see us one day. We're conveniently located at 2230 Mercury Boulevard in Murfreesboro, and we have hot, delicious Otis Spunkmeyer cookies every day. Come and see us, First National Bank of Murfreesboro, 2230 Mercury Boulevard. Our number is 494-4200. Member FDIC, and home of Otis Spunkmeyer hot, delicious cookies. First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
Here are your political insights from ABC News. Gun sales continue at a brisk pace, skyrocketing after the Connecticut school shooting. Vice President Biden will present his proposals to reduce gun violence this week. ABC's Chuck Sievertson has more on the story.
A majority of Americans want assault weapons off the streets, says Senator Chuck Schumer, New York Democrat.
I'm urging our major gun retailers in America, the Walmarts, the sports authorities, to voluntarily suspend sales of modern assault-style weapons.
Doubting that assault weapons ban can pass Congress.
You don't want to bet your house on the outcome.
NRA President David Keene saying names should be added to background checklists,
including those who've been adjudicated to be mentally incompetent and potentially dangerous.
Keene on CNN's State of the Union. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Republicans continue to raise doubts about President Obama's nominee for defense secretary. Republican Senator Bob Corker tells ABC's This Week there are questions about Chuck Hagel's character.
Just his overall temperament, and is he suited to run a department or a big agency or a big entity like the Pentagon.
Former Secretary of State and retired General Colin Powell says Hagel's knowledge of veterans and troops will be good for the military.
This is a guy who will be very careful about putting their lives at risk because he put his life at risk. He knows what war is, and he will fight a war if it's necessary. But he's a guy who will do it with great deliberation and care.
Powell on NBC's Meet the Press. And those are your political insights. I'm Brad Wheelis, ABC News.
This is Sheila at Ryan Flowers and Gifts, and flowers are a wonderful way to tell someone how you feel. Fresh Cut, we have roses, we have other bright colored flowers, we have balloons, stuffed animals, box chocolates of South's Finest Chocolates, which are made in Tennessee. We have silk arrangements as well. We also do combos, like if you want bear and candy. This is Sheila from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts, located at 117 South Academy Street in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Our phone number, 615-893-7134.